episode 138 of the podcast. This week, we'll talk about how dog training is so much more than group classes and why groomers should reach out to dog trainers. In the second part, we'll talk about what dog trainers need to know more about the grooming industry and how that knowledge will serve all of our dog owners. You're listening to the Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast. I'm Chrissy Neumeyer-Smith. I'm a certified professional groomer, a certified behavior consultant for canines, a certified professional dog trainer, and the owner of Happy Critters in Nashua, New Hampshire. And this, my friends and colleagues, is the podcast where grooming and training meet. The inspiration for this episode was a Facebook conversation about a behavior problem. And in the first 20 minutes, there were about 50 responses. And I think only about 5 of them mentioned anything about training, trainers, or any sort of behavior change. That's only about 10% of groomers in this discussion even thinking about how to change the behavior problem. And I know I'm being a little bit vague about what the conversation was about, because it's not even necessarily the discussion, but what really got me thinking about it was why? Why aren't groomers thinking about dog trainers? Why is that entire field being forgotten about? Why do we jump from, I'm a groomer and I'll do more grooming, or I'll have them come in for more grooming, or they go to the vet? And there's this entire field of professionals in between those two things. There's a whole load of professionals who are there just to work on behavior change and work on problems and solving problems for people and their dogs. So it was kind of strange to me. And again, I'm the six-year-old who asks why. I will always be the six-year-old who asks why. And I really started thinking about it. I think that what non-dog trainers think of as dog training is group obedience classes. So I think that when somebody says dog training, they have images of people walking around with their dogs on leash. And they're walking around in circles, and they're working on heel, and they're working on sits and stays and downs. And I think non-trainers think, how would that ever help? What purpose would that serve for the behavior problem that I'm seeing in the grooming shop or in the vet office? And it might not be the right choice for that. However, the modern dog training industry is so diverse. It is so much more than group obedience classes. And when you think about the diversity, that's when you start to understand, oh wait, there is probably a trainer out there who could help me with the very problem that I'm seeing here in the grooming setting. Just like other professionals, other animal professionals, there's a large variety. So I want you to start thinking about the knowledge and skill set of this other profession, this other whole group of professionals. And there are so many. There are trainers, there are certified professional dog trainers, there are behavior consultants, there's a wide variety of methods and skill sets. Of course, just like in the grooming industry, there are plenty of fabulous professionals who do not have certifications because it's another industry that is a trade. And I want you to think about the problem you are seeing is probably something that a trainer would analyze differently than you as a non-trainer would analyze it. You as a non-trainer. Here's an example. A lot of these problems that we see happening in the grooming setting are happening outside of grooming also. And trainers see a wide variety of things like fears and phobias and aggression, disruptive and nuisance behaviors like constant barking. I mean, these are all things we do every day. Now, the trainers out there said yes, but the groomers also said yes. Oh, wait, you mean the trainers do that too? Yeah, the trainers do that too. These are the kind of things that we all work with on a day-to-day basis. Fears and phobias. Now, in general, for a grooming setting, that's probably fears of equipment or people or other dogs or procedures. But from a training point of view, that could be dogs who are afraid of noises outside, being afraid of the car, being afraid of grooming and handling and vet visits, being afraid of children, like lots and lots of fears and phobias. Aggression, that could be toward people, that could be toward other dogs, that could be toward other types of pets in the house. There are lots of problems that we as trainers see, and that should overlap with the grooming process. So groomers, instead of thinking, I'm not going to send them to a group class, I want you to think there's an opportunity to send them to a professional who has a different skill set than I do as a groomer. And I would love for groomers to have more of a behavior skill set. I mean, certainly that's what the whole podcast is about, making groomers more like trainers and trainers more like groomers and getting everybody on the same page. But the fact is that we have a different level of training in the training industry than other industries have. So I want you to think about there are a number of ways to address behavior problems, and there are also a number of different types of training. And perhaps a group obedience class would actually serve an owner who hasn't started any training yet. So you might think, well, how would that help me in the grooming setting? Why would that be helpful? But perhaps this dog has never really been asked to do anything and is just kind of, you know, running back and forth from outside to pee to the food dish, and that's all they ever do with him. And a group class might be the perfect place to start that dog. And you know what, trainers? What I find with most trainers is if it's not what's going to work for that dog, we don't try to make them fit in that class. We'll give them other suggestions. So here's another example. Perhaps a dog sport, like agility, for instance, would help a nervous dog become more confident. And we use that a lot in dog training. Maybe we can find a dog sport that will help this dog feel more confident. As an example, the dogs that's afraid to be up on the table, perhaps agility is something that would be beneficial for that dog, or some other dog sport, dock diving, nose work. Some of these dog sports are really good for taking the edge off of a dog who is bored. I mean, how many of our dogs are bored? When I hear the term hyper, I immediately think that's a high energy dog that has nothing to do and is making up its own games. As an owner of border collies, I can tell you that a bored animal is not going to be the same as a dog that gets worked often enough to feel content. So even if you think, well, maybe that won't really directly help me in the grooming setting, sometimes we need to do some foundational work with an owner and their dog so that we can then work on a more precise problem, like having a clipper near their eye, you know, whatever that problem may be. But if this dog is seriously just going indoors and outdoors, sleeping on the bed and eating when they put down the food dish, and then there are some people who just free feed, so the dog isn't even relying on anybody for food. Some of these dogs, they're almost feral, and they have no business coming into a grooming shop until they have some sort of manners, right? So I want you to be thinking about there are lots of different types of training that we can do. And I want you to think also that there are things like private lessons that can help a dog and owner overcome some very specific behaviors. I work with a lot of fears and phobias. I love working with fears and phobias. That's such a great challenge to work with. Somebody who knows about behavior might pick up on medical problems that you as a groomer might have missed. Now keep in mind, we're all professionals. A trainer should refer to somebody else just as much as a groomer should refer to somebody else. And there are plenty of times where I tell people, you know, I really want the vet to take a look at your dog. Now, if I do refer to a veterinary behaviorist, which in the United States, a behaviorist is a veterinary behaviorist, a veterinarian who went on to study more and became a specialist in behavior, or a PhD behaviorist. I know other places that's more of a behavior consultant, a trainer who does behavior stuff, but not in the United States. But there are times where I might send them to the vet and say, you know what, here are my concerns. This is what seemed really abnormal to me behavior-wise. And maybe we should think about a vet behaviorist, which their vet should do. Like, I draw the line there. I'm like, tell your vet, I'm thinking maybe a vet behaviorist, and this is what I found to be abnormal. That's the limit of what I'm allowed to do as a behavior consultant. But if you, as a groomer, find a trainer locally and start talking to them about what you need in the grooming setting and what kind of problems you face, maybe a collaboration is perfect for our shared clientele, right? Our shared clientele, because trainers, I gotta tell you, the dogs that you train, they have grooming needs. Groomers, I gotta tell you, the dogs that you groom, they have training needs. And the veterinarians, they all need veterinary care, right? So we have this shared clientele, and we can build a better dog population and a more knowledgeable dog ownership by just collaborating together. So don't feel like sending them to a trainer might be a waste of time, because if that class that they offer or the service that they offer doesn't fit, they will go ahead and figure out who they could send to. And that's just good business. If you're enjoying this podcast, please remember to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes, and tell all of your friends. Here's a pretty common misconception coming from non-groomers. Things that I've heard pretty recently. Well, bad things happen during grooming and vet visits. Certainly dogs would be afraid of that. Or that's where so many problems start, with the grooming or with the vet visit. And here's my problem with that. Hold on tight, because I'm sure that someone out there will feel like this is a little bit of tough love. So with all kindness to all of you, groomers, vets, and vet techs want dogs to be good. And quite frankly, it's not really our job to teach the dogs the basic skills of being touched all over, responding in a safe way when they're stressed or scared, or introducing them to their first experience with needing to focus and be handled for an extended period of time. Take that in for a minute. That's not really our job. It becomes our job. It becomes part of our job because people don't think to do it before they go to a groomer or before they go to a vet visit. And I don't know why. Certainly, there are plenty of people who do plan ahead, and they're like, hey, let's get touching him all over because he's going to need some health care someday. But so many people do not. And then the groomer or the vet gets thrown under the bus. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I speak for many when I ask, why are dogs coming to grooming and vet visits with no skills preparing them for it? It's not like that the grooming visits and the vet visits are bad or stressful or where the problem started, because the problem started when an owner didn't know to plan ahead that their dog will be needing these services. The problem didn't start with the groomer. The problem didn't start with the vet. The problem started before that. And the problem started when an owner just didn't know to prepare for those things. And since I seem to be delving out a ton of tough love here, the problem started with the idea that if a dog is uncomfortable or in pain, it's fine and natural for them to be aggressive, like as if it's a free pass to hurt people, and it's not. We do need to teach dogs to be comfortable with what we're doing, but we also need to teach them that we're trying to help them. We're trying to keep everybody safe. We will be doing things that are uncomfortable. Certainly when I was a vet tech, there were plenty of times I did things that were uncomfortable. Certainly as a dog owner, I'm not going to not look at a cut because, oh, well, you know, he might be scared or stressed. What if he bites me? My dog's not going to bite me. We've prepared for this. They have to be able to handle it if they are in pain. This is part of being safe. This is part about learning how to be a safe dog. And unless they are in a total panic, I'm pretty confident that the average dog can do it. They can learn to be safe. Maybe not every Tom, Dick, and Harry come over and handle them when they don't feel good or when they're hurt, but it's still important. We can't give them a free pass because, oh, well, of course he was scared. Well, what would you do if you had a loud dryer next to you? The poor thing. I think, honestly, there could be a dead groomer on the floor and someone will be saying, well, I mean, it's not really the dog's fault. She nicked a nail. So let's all calm down for a minute and remember that we have a job to do in the grooming room and we have a job to do at the veterinary office. And we need to prepare the dogs for the things they are going to have to go through. This is part of the average dog's life. They all have some sort of grooming needs. They all have some sort of health care needs. And you may have, you know, a short-coated dog that wears his nails down constantly and needs very, very little. And that's great, but that's not the average. Most of them have a lot more care that they need. So what is the solution? Because that's important too. This isn't just a rant about what's going wrong, but what's really the solution? And I think that we should be preparing dogs for those realities. And I'm going to say to focus on grooming, because if you focus on the grooming setting and the things that dogs go through in grooming, the dogs will automatically be better for the vet and for their owners, because grooming touches everywhere. And if you think about the vet visit, the wellness check, the vet's got their hands all over them, they're listening to the heart, they're listening to the lungs, they're looking in the ears, they're touching them all over. A lot of that stuff is stuff that groomers do. We're touching them all over as a groomer, we're running them through range of motion, maybe not intentionally range of motion, but the job that we do runs them through their range of motion. We're looking in their ears, we're in between the pads of their feet, we are touching every little inch of that dog's body, we have our finger in their mouth sometimes to pull their lip back so that we can get a little bit of hair trimmed. We're all over that dog. And if that dog is comfortable with tools all over them, they're not going to think twice about a stethoscope. And that's what you need to think about. If this is something so normal and being put up on a table or being put into a bathtub or being put into a crate and being walked into a place that services other dogs, you know, that smells like other dogs, perhaps they see other dogs, perhaps they see a lot of other dogs and there's other dog noise. So if we teach them to be good for the grooming setting and this endurance run, because most vet visits do not last as long as a grooming session, they're going to be better for their owners and they're going to be better for the vet. So I want trainers to start thinking about working with animals in a way that we do with grooming. Now, it is common for trainers to talk about cooperative care. In the grooming industry, it's usually referred to as holistic grooming. When we're talking about the behavior aspect in training, it's referred to as cooperative care. And I know we give a lot of examples in the dog training industry about lions and elephants and dolphins and animals that you wouldn't normally get up close and snuggle with like a pet dog, where we're actually able to draw blood or do some foot care or other types of veterinary handling. And it's really beautiful to watch. So training-wise, we know we can teach these behaviors to animals that are not house pets. How cool is that? Now, the question is, why aren't we doing the same thing with dogs? And many people are doing the same thing with dogs. The grooming industry hasn't necessarily caught on to some of that, but a lot of dog trainers are. However, here's the part that gets forgotten. Grooming takes longer. So a really impressive drawing blood from a tiger that took 5 minutes is drastically different than spending an hour and a half with a dog. And I need us to think about that. Foot touches, for example. We're touching feet over and over and over and over again. If that's what this dog finds difficult, we need to build on that and get them used to not just once or twice or, you know, 10 minutes per foot. We need to build past what we thought we were doing before, okay? The training industry has really kind of dropped the ball because they don't necessarily look at the grooming process and understand what the dog is going to be expected to do. Now, I'm also going to add in here that I'm pretty sure that some trainer out there probably just gasped. Why do they need to be doing this for an hour and a half? Because this process takes time. Drying, brushing, clipping, scissoring, nail trims, ear cleaning, bath, you know, all of these things take time. Takes a considerable amount of time. Now, another thing is that groomers have gotten tired of trainers sending stuff like the owners are massaging his feet on the couch at night, which is a nice step. It's a very, very small first step. It does not at all mimic what we do in the grooming shop. So they need to go beyond that. We need to go beyond that first step of, hey, look at that, he's letting me touch his feet, to actually, he's letting me touch his feet with intention. He's standing while I touch his feet. He's letting me touch his feet with stuff. And we need to go beyond it. We need to go past it. So the grooming industry needs aren't being met, but the training industry didn't know that. So trainers, when you think about foot touching, for example, you also need to think about the way they're going to be touched in a grooming setting. When you think about a dog that doesn't like being touched at all, you need to think about how that's going to affect their grooming needs. And one of the things that I think trainers come up with a lot is nose targeting and chin targeting. And someone out there is going to be very, very upset by this, but I like nose targeting and I like chin targeting, but I don't like them in grooming. Because frankly, there's no one looking at the dog's face to see if it moved off their nose target or their chin target. Because I'm trying to brush a tail, or I'm trying to work on a foot, or I'm trying to get a really nice smooth finish on the back of their neck, and I'm not watching for their nose. So cooperative care, from a grooming point of view, is a dog who is holding still, is their way of saying, I am ready. That's the cooperation and cooperative care for grooming. Or when I feel in my hand that they're just totally relaxed under my hand. It's a tactile sensation. But the idea of holding a nose target and then they move the nose target, that will be betrayed in grooming. They're going to move their nose from the nose target and no one's going to know. And they're going to get frustrated. And why wouldn't they? Because they've been getting taught, like, hey, I'll back off as soon as you move your nose from the nose target, right? We need to think about the things that we do and the way that they function. Now, trainers, if you are using nose targeting and chin targeting, I just want you to train beyond it. Train beyond it. It's a good tool, but these are training wheels. You got to learn to ride the bike without them. Train beyond it. It's not that sitting on the couch massaging feet is bad. It's that it's not enough. And it's not that nose targeting or chin targeting are bad. It's that it's not enough. And groomers don't have the time, the extra people, the extra hands, in some cases, to operate a clicker and treats. We've already got a dryer under our arm, a hand on a dog, a brush and a comb in the other hand, and sometimes I have a leg underneath the dog. We're already doing four things with three tools, and somebody wants us to add more tools. What the grooming industry, I think, is asking for is for the dogs to be better prepared before they get there. And I think because that's not what's been happening, a lot of groomers have lost faith in the training industry. So, groomers, listening to this episode, this is a great episode to send your trainers to start the conversation so that you can collaborate together. Trainers, if you want to know more about the grooming industry, this is a great episode to send a groomer to. Like, hey, how can we collaborate? How can we work together? Because it serves our owners. We have the same clientele. It serves our owners really well for us to work together and help these dogs for the 15 years of grooming needs that they have. If you'd like more information, you can find me at Chrissy at happycritters.net, happycrittersdogtraining.com, or you can join the Facebook group, Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast, or the Facebook page, Creating Great Grooming Dogs. I really look forward to hearing from you.